listening to a podcast from The National.
It's that time of year again when tennis fans in the UAE flock to Zayed Sports City in Abu Dhabi for the Mubadala World Tennis Championship. Starting on Thursday, the three-day tournament will see six of the world's best players battle it out for a winner-takes-all $250,000 prize. This year's tournament is headlined by 12-time Grand Slam champion Novak Djokovic, who is making his eagerly anticipated return to action following a lengthy layoff with injury. And for the first time ever, the tournament will be staging a women's match, featuring none other than 23-time major winner and all-round superstar Serena Williams, as she takes her first steps back, having not played since winning the Australian Open in January. This week's Extra Time podcast is a Mubadala World Tennis Championship special, as we discuss what to expect of the tournament, all the players taking part, and the returns of Djokovic and Williams. I'm your host, John Turner. Joining me in the studio, Graeme Cagle.
Hey, John.
How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. As you said, it's that time of year again.
Yeah, it's great stuff, isn't it? I mean, as tennis fans, it's always nice. Mubadala is a fantastic little event anyway, but it also means that we're edging closer to the start of the tennis season, which is wonderful news.
No, absolutely. I said, I think we're very, very lucky and privileged to sort of be in this position where, as you said, look at straight after this, it's only a couple of weeks after the tournament, so we went to the Australian Open, which is probably, well, last year I think was probably the best Grand Slam of the year in terms of the quality and action. And it's normally one of the most exciting. It's one of the best ones in the UAE for timing as well, for when the games are on. So it's a great time.
Good stuff. Right, before we get into the kind of all the details about what's going on, let's just quickly run over the kind of format of the tournament, because it's quite a unique setup, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. As I said, they've always stuck with the six-player schedule, with the idea of on the opening day on Thursday you have two what are called quarterfinals, even when there's two of them, and the two winners of those then go through to the semi-finals, where the two top seed players will have got received buys to go through. In this case, it's Novak Djokovic and Dominic Thiem who will be having the buys, and then the winners of those matches will go through to the final. But to ensure, they didn't always do this initially, but to make sure that everyone gets a couple of good matches, because the key part of this tournament is about them all fine-tuning their game ahead of the Australian Open and the early stage of the season. There's a fifth-place playoff on the Friday for the losers from Thursday, and then there's a third-place playoff on Saturday for the losers of the semi-finals.
And then, of course, there's the women's match this year as well, which we'll discuss in a bit more detail. Now, let's get straight into Serena Williams, Graeme. I mean, you were the one, bravo to you. You were the one who broke the news, global exclusive, that Serena Williams would be playing in the first ever women's match at Mubadala World Tennis Championship. She'll be taking on Latvian world number 7 and winner-hitting machine, something like that, Yelena Ostapenko. Literally doesn't know how to play percentage tennis, but it's thrilling nonetheless. She obviously won the French Open earlier this year, her first major title. I mean, that should be really good fun.
Absolutely. As I said, you've got the reigning Australian Open champion up against the reigning French Open champion for your first women's match at the Mubadala World Tennis Championship. Is sensational. I spoke to Vicky Gunnarsson, the tournament director, earlier, and she's absolutely thrilled about how this has come about. It's kind of been a bit of perfect timing, because I know they've been quite keen on trying to get a women's match involved, or trying to vary it up after the initial years of the tournament starting, and sort of they were quite keen on sort of, but it's more a case of looking for the opportunity. And obviously Serena hasn't played since early last year. She fell pregnant and then has given birth, and now is planning to come back. And from the tournament point of view, it's brilliant. It's a great name to have. She's the greatest player of her generation comfortably, because let's face it, it's amazing. Anyone else who hadn't played for a year, you'd sort of not really know what kind of a level she's going to be coming out. But the fact she's, everyone's kind of expecting her to do so well in Australia, in the Australian Open, kind of tells you what the expectation in there is. So it's going to be fascinating to see immediately what kind of level she's at.
Well, that's it. With the Mubadala World Tennis Championship, I mean, it, for all intents and purposes, is an exhibition event, but it is played with real intensity. So it could offer a decent indicator of where she is in terms of match fitness and in terms of physical fitness as well, ahead of her title defence in Melbourne.
Well, I think as we're going to sort of touch on with the men's game, sort of, obviously, as you say, it's not an ATP or WTA sanctioned events, but you can read a lot into what goes on, like especially last year in the men's competition, we saw a lot that would carry on into the season ahead. And I think certainly we're going to get an early indicator of how Serena's moving. Like, I don't expect her to be going flat out here, sort of like, this is going to be an early test of how she's hitting the ball from the back of the court. And I think in a way, Ostapenko will be a good little opponent for her in regard to the fact that anything short or mistimed, she'll go after. So she'll punish her if Serena's not quite right. So I think in that regard, it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, that should be really good fun. And she's playing on Saturday, I think. Is it at 7 p.m.? No, 5 p.m.
Yeah,
she's on at 5 p.m.
On the Saturday, the schedule is that the third place player has been moved forward slightly to 2:30.
Okay.
Then they're on at 5 o'clock. And then the championship match to decide the men's winner of the tournament is on at 7 p.m. afterwards.
That'll be good fun on Saturday then.
No, it's fantastic. Like, I know they're absolutely thrilled at Mubadla about this. And anyone who's got tickets on Saturday, you know, they've got an extra bonus match, and what a match to have as a bonus. And I think there are still tickets available for Saturday, so I think it's going to be a fantastic occasion.
Yeah, really good fun. Speaking of long-awaited returns, I mean, his return isn't quite as long-awaited as Serena's, but Novak Djokovic out in force in Abu Dhabi this weekend as well. I mean, he hasn't played since July, since retiring from his Wimbledon match against Thomas Berdych with an ongoing elbow injury. I mean, it'd be really interesting to see what sort of form he's in heading into Mubadla as well. And of course, then as he kind of plots his assault on a seventh Australian Open title.
Well, it's interesting because, as you said, he's been out injured. But before then, he'd been in probably the worst form of his career for about 5 or 6 years, because he hadn't won a slam in 2017. And he went out in the second round of the Australian Open. And at the French, he was nowhere either. And it didn't look whether, in hindsight now, we know the injury probably was troubling him a little bit. But the thing I always liked about Djokovic was the power of his mind, really. So he had this great ability to, no matter what happened on the tennis court, if he'd be broken, if he'd drop a set in a tiebreak, his ability to bounce back. And he almost had an aura over him, sort of like the only kind of thing you see with Federer and Nadal. But it almost felt like a bit more ruthless, like he always believed he could win from any scenario, and that seemed to disappear, because there was a lot of matches, particularly in the clay court season, where you kind of felt it had gone for him. So what I'm really interested in seeing is kind of where his hunger and motivation's at, and obviously there's going to be so much we're going to see here in terms of sort of like, this is about finessing his game and sort of like himself seeing where he's up against opponents. But I think he could be the story of 2018. I think Nadal and Federer are the story of 2017 with their comebacks. Now, I think it's all set up for him in 2018.
That's my kind of big prediction for this year. We'll be releasing our kind of big predictions for 2018. And ultimately, Djokovic, I can see coming back and dominating, returning to world number one, picking up a couple of Grand Slams. I think, I mean, without knowing the full details of his issues and problems over the last year or so, it was clear that a lack of focus or a readjusting of his goals after he'd won the French Open, whether he wasn't sure what he was then fighting for, there just seemed to be, as you said, his edge was kind of missing. But now he's one of the hunters again and has plenty to play for. If that's enough to focus him again and he's 100% physically fit, then he could do some serious damage this year.
No, absolutely. As you said, it's when he won the French Open, that was, in 2016, that was the last of his slams he's won, and it was his 12th, and it was his career Grand Slam. It was the one he was been pushing for, and I guess it is difficult once you reach the top of the mountain, what next? And in a way, it kind of makes you admire people like Federer that much more, because Federer just has never seemed not interested in winning. He's always kept going, no matter what happened, and maybe this might be what going to happen to Djokovic is what happened to Federer to an extent, where Federer, I don't think, ever lost his focus. He just had very strong opposition around him. Like, he won, if you look through the record of Federer, he won a lot of his slams up until the end of 2007. Then Nadal got very strong on more surfaces than just clay, and then Djokovic came through. So it's been a lot harder for him. I think Federer's enjoyed the challenge of that. And I think Djokovic will enjoy the challenge of trying to get back up there, because he's down at number 12 in the world right now. And he hasn't got a load of points to defend in the first half of the season. Like I said, he had a very average Australian Open, only second round. So if he has a good run there, he'll be straight back up into the top 10 immediately. And obviously, if he won it, it'd probably be very close to the top 5 very quickly.
Bringing it back to Djokovic at Mubadla, Graham, I mean, the fact that he has been out for a long time, perhaps his own expectations might not be what they were before. But I mean, you look at his record at the tournament, then really, based on that, you'd expect him to win it.
Oh, absolutely. I think, he has to be the strong favourite when you look at, sort of, with all due respect to the players he's going to be up against, he's got to be a strong, strong favourite. In regard, he's never actually lost a match when he stepped on court at Mubadla. And I remember a couple of times, I think there was one year when he was playing David Ferrer, and Ferrer was probably at the top of his game at the time, was ensconced in the top six, and Djokovic was absolutely frightening against him in that match, and sort of just, this, when he's on it, his levels, his ability to find wins from all over the court, and just his energy around the court as well, and his ability to make your opponent play that one extra shot, or as he was so good at doing against Andy Murray in so many Australian Open finals, just... okay, you're going to have to win this point. I'm not going to give it to you. Yeah, you're in the advantage here, but you're going to have to hit the winner. I'm not going to give it to you. And sometimes that's all you need, sometimes at that point, just the ability to stay in points. And as I said, his one technical defeat was a walkover because he was ill before the 2015 final against Andy Murray. So I think whoever beats him, it'll be a sensational effort if someone does stop him this year here, because his record, he said, speaks for itself.
Let's have a look at those players that he's up against, Graham. First of all, the other player that's got a bye through to the semi-finals, Austria's world number five, Dominic Thiem. Now, he's part of a select group of players that will be looking really to kind of push the establishment, the so-called Big Four or Big Five, again this year in terms of Grand Slam titles, in terms of pushing himself up even further up the rankings. Now, he's a player really with a huge amount of ability. He should really be kind of pleasing the crowds this week. He's got a great kind of shot selection, loves to hit winners, has got a very nice, big, powerful, single-handed backhand. I mean, he should be real good value this week.
I think he's a lot of fun, absolutely. I think it's going to be great. It's his first time here. So I think it's an appeal to him, because I think he's trying to work on his hard court game particularly, because we know how good he is on clay. He was the only person last year to beat Rafa Nadal in a competitive match on clay, which... You think how amazing Nadal was last year. That was a hell of an effort. And you just feel like him, like Alex Zverev, a few of the other players, like he's ready to kick on, and it's kind of the Grand Slams or the big ones. And sort of if he can have a strong run here, and I think he'll be very confident of at least getting to the final and he'll probably expect to take on Djokovic the way the draw is set up. If he can even push Djokovic close or even get a confidence-building win over him at the start of the year, that could really kick him on, because, as I said, it's important... for the next generation, they have to start sort of getting the results of the slams. And so I think I'm like you, I'm really looking for him to kick on this year.
Also taking part, Graham, Kevin Anderson, the world number 14 from South Africa. Now, he enters the tournament after a really kind of feel-good 2017. He was out with injury a little bit heading into the year, made his first Grand Slam final at the US Open, got back inside the top 20 in the world. I mean, you spoke to him recently as well, didn't you? And kind of he was kind of explaining about how sort of determined he is to kind of push on again this year.
No, absolutely. Like, he had his breakthrough run at the US Open, getting to the final and losing to Nadal. But he's not resting in his laurels at all. And it's actually really nice to hear that he's very determined to sort of put in a strong showing here, because he's made one appearance before here in January 2016. He felt he didn't do himself justice. And that was kind of borne out by the fact that he was struggling with injuries. He's quite a bit of knee problems and shoulder problems. And in a way, his 2017 season doesn't really kind of get the credit it deserves, because it started the year in the top 20 and fell far out of it because he missed a lot of action with injury. And he's kind of brought himself back up now to where he's in the top 20 again at 14th in the world. And so that should give him a good seeding for Australian Open. And now it's up to him to really kick on. He's shown that he might not be able to sort of beat the really top guys, but then if you're in the best of the rest, and as we saw in the US Open, you never know how the draw can pan out, and you've got the chance for these great results, because he really capitalised on it when he had his chance at Flushing Meadow. And he'll fancy his chances here as well, because he's playing Pablo Carreño Busta in the first round, which was the guy who beat to actually get to the final at the US Open. So it should make for a cracking match.
Definitely. And then on Pablo Carreño Busta, another player that enjoyed a really good 2017. He started the world at number 30 in the world, finished inside the top 10. He's a really good, solid all-round player, isn't he? I mean, he should be... he'll also fancy his chances this week of at least... he could certainly get involved, make the final.
Well, he pushed Anderson really hard in that semi-final. It was like almost a battle of attrition between the two, and that's what I'm kind of expecting on Thursday between them. So they're both trying to find, their own levels again, but trying to test out the weaknesses of each other. So, as you said, he's very consistent, especially from the back of the court. Got some very, very powerful ground strokes in him. So I think that's the beauty of this tournament this year, is like pretty much you can make a case for any of the six of them making it to the final and sort of kind of coming away with the big check at the end of this. And sort of there's absolutely no reason, as you said, he's full of confidence. He's had his best year yet on the ATP Tour. He's got experience, so there's absolutely no reason why he can't kick on.
Taking part in the other quarterfinal is another very solid Spaniard in Roberto Bautista Agut. Another good season for him as well, finished inside the top 20 again. I think it was the fourth consecutive year he's finished inside the top 25. Really solid player. I mean, he comes in as a replacement for Nadal. So, but I mean, again, he should be, you know, good value this week.
Oh, no, absolutely. He'll see this as a great opportunity to show what he can do. It's like he's being up there. We're in an era now with tennis where we don't really know what's happening next in terms of, like, Federer and Nadal, Djokovic and Murray are all past 30 and Stan as well, like the top boys. And we don't know when the bodies are going to finally give up or their levels are going to drop. And Roberto's one of the guys who's up there who is more than capable of having the game to kind of capitalise. He's consistent. Obviously, when you naturally think of him as a clay court player, like the because that's what the Spaniards come up through. And sort of, you obviously expect them to be consistent, but he's a cracking player on a hard court. And he'll definitely, with the draw he's got as well, fully expect to make it through to the semi-finals and will fancy his chances. Or possibly against, he'll be the first. If he gets through, he faces Djokovic. And it'll be Djokovic's first time on court since July. So if you had to pick a time to play Novak, this is now.
And he's beaten him before, didn't he? He beat him in Shanghai, I think, in 2016. So he knows, he can certainly mix it with the best of them. So that if he does get through, that could be a really intriguing match. The guy that Bautista Agut is playing in that quarterfinal is sort of Russian young hotshot Andrei Rublev. 20-year-old, reached the next-gen finals, claimed his first ATP Tour title in Croatia as well in 2017. Now, I really like the look of this guy. I think he could be a real breakout star in 2018.
No, absolutely. And he could be a lot of fun as well. As you said, he got to the last eight at the US Open and lost to Nadal. There was no disgrace in doing that. And sort of, it'll be interesting to see what he's learned from that experience, because you're never too old or too young to really learn on a tennis court from this stuff. Because, as you said, when you're speaking to Kevin Anderson, who is considerably older than Rublev, he said he learned a lot from his defeat to Nadal, sort of coping with pressure, you know, because playing someone like Rafa Nadal or Novak Djokovic, no matter where it be it a Grand Slam or be it an ATP 250 event, you can always learn from the experience. And I think Rublev will be a much better player for that. And as we saw, sort of at the end of the season, he finished it strongly. And I said, I think he's definitely going to be sort of the wild card of this event, of really, like, no one really is going to know quite what he's going to be capable of. I don't think he knows yet really where he's at in terms of his game. So I think he's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to watching him.
Yeah, agreed. Me too. Just to confirm the running order for the tournament this week, the action will start on Thursday with the first quarterfinal between Carreño Busta and Anderson at 5 p.m. That will then be followed by the other quarterfinal between Bautista Agut and Rublev at 7 p.m. Then on the Friday, the action kicks off with the fifth place playoff at 2:30. The first of the semi-finals will be Dominic Thiem will take on the winner of Carreño Busta and Anderson, and that will be at 5 p.m. And that will be followed by Djokovic taking on either Bautista Agut or Rublev at 7 p.m. And then on Saturday, the day starts with the third place playoff at 2:30, followed by Serena Williams against Yelena Ostapenko at 5, and then of course the final will kind of end things at 7 p.m. Anything else to add, Graham? Where can people get tickets?
They're still available on Ticketmaster.ae, and you can also get them in stores at all Virgin Mega stores across the UAE.
Good stuff. Looking forward to it. Thanks for your time this week. No,
cheers, John.
Well, that's all we have time for this the Battle of World Tennis Championship Extra Time Special. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on the website at thenational.ae. Thanks for listening.